If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast. Probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast. I nearly bungled my lines there, but I didn't. How are you doing?
Top of Japan.
I made it through the intro. I can do
Topo
it.
Topo Japano. Oh, Chris, we're recording this on a Friday, I don't mind admitting, and I do feel incredibly jealous of the possibility of you sat there in your studio in Tokyo. You could go out at any moment today, like right now, and you could just roll into the Love Hotel district of Shibuya and just get absolutely blasted drunk and have a right old bloody good evening. I'm so jealous of you right now because here I live in deepest, darkest Essex, and admittedly I am going into London tonight for a booze up, but it won't be as good as your booze up that you could have in that there Shibuya.
I don't know about that. Well, actually, yeah, you're right. Japan is better for that. I do enjoy a night out in Japan a lot more than the UK. I love pubs, right? I fucking miss pubs so much. But just the bar culture, the nightlife culture here, you know, go to like two or three bars, go to karaoke, get an izakaya, go to late night ramen. There's like a procedure for a good night out in Japan, whereas in the UK, you got to wing it. And you usually end up in some sort of shite nightclub playing dubstep music or some crap. I don't miss that. Don't miss that at all.
You know what I really want? I really want a bloody
martini.
I want a martini with an olive in it. And I want a quiet, nice, quiet sort of cocktail bar in Shibuya. And I want to sit down and I want to smell the smoke. I want to smell the little sort of snacks that you get, edamame beans and stuff. And I want to have a lovely, well-made martini with a bloody olive in it. A big, juicy olive. That's what I want, John. That's what I want,
Chris. Shaken, not stirred.
Exactly.
James Bond himself, shaken not stirred, with his vodka martini and his olives. I want some olives. I've got an unhealthy olive addiction recently. If you get some good olives, Italian olives, amazing. We've got a story here from Justin. I'm very hungry as well. All I've had today is I ordered some chicken and broccoli. It's my new health regime.
What?
Health regimen. Health regime.
Gross.
That sounds
you're gross.
Dictators.
I had
dictator.
I had. I've got some ostrich in the fridge. I had a bit yesterday.
What
it's quite. You can cook like ostrich meat. You don't have to. You can do it quite pink, which is for obvious reasons. But it surprised me still. It still feels wrong cooking a bird. Not all that well.
A mega bird, a big bird, a bloody
mega
hell!
Bird.
What does it taste like? What does ostrich
it's nice,
taste like?
It just tastes like. Just like beef. I mean, to be fair, the stuff I had, like, they'd pre-added some sort of garlic to it. So mainly taste of garlic. But it was not a bad little... From Aldi. Aldi ostrich. I'm eating Aldi ostriches, Chris.
I remember the last bizarre meat I had was with Joey. We were in, like, a bar where you... It was a bar, an airsoft drinking food bar, which are three things that probably shouldn't be combined. You get your drink and then you get like an airsoft gun you can shoot at the range. And then all the meat was like really obscure kind of meat that should not be edible or should be considered. And we ordered the crocodile tongue and it was an atrocity and it was flavoured on. Oh, it was so bad. It was so bad.
What a pain in the arse to open up a bloody alligator just to steal his tongue. Like, I mean, It's fraught with fraught with trouble, I'd say.
Fraught with trouble.
I will say that I will eat meat-wise. I remember when we did the Football Ramble, football podcast we do, available now. We did it for like 15 years, and about 12 years ago, somebody who was a fan of us just sent us a big jiffy bag full of what can only be described as mystery meat. Just a bag. Marks & Spencer's carrier bag, loose, full of brown... sort of dried meat.
Oh,
and I ate every last bit of that. Who knows what is in my constitution? Who knows what went in my stomach that day? But I just, nom, 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 nom. Mystery meat. Thank you very much.
I last night I watched the film Society of the Snow about the Uruguayan plane crash where they had to become cannibals to survive in the Andes.
Okay.
And you saying eating mystery meat is conjuring up some awful visuals of,
bad
of what they went through. really good actually. Watch Society of Snow. Society of the Snow, I think it's called. Incredible stuff. The fact they survived for like 90 days at 4,000 meters in a frozen mountain where it's minus 30 degrees. Mind-boggling. Yeah. And then they got ostracized for eating their dead friends.
Their friends, yeah.
And it's what a story. Incredible stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you sort of turn up in your kind of like, you see your neighbour and you sort of go, what have you been up to? I ate a man. Like, you're going to get ostracised. But if everyone knows the story why you actually ate that man or woman, I think that's fair enough, to be honest.
It's all about
no
context.
No further questions. Yeah,
context,
exactly.
Isn't it? Mm. Absolutely.
If you're eating a Handies, not in the Andes, bad. If you're eating a Handies in the Andes, good.
Oh, God. Oh, my Lord. Anyway, we've got a story here from Justin, who says, Dear Crackerjack Chris and Pepperjack Pete, I recently travelled Japan for the first time this past October and had a wonderful first time solo travelling the Golden Route through Tokyo, Kyoto and Osaka. Since this was my first trip completely solo, I was understandably pretty nervous and not sure quite what to expect. My first morning in Tokyo, I decided to head over to Asakusa and visit the renowned Sensoji Temple. It was there that I discovered Omikuji, the paper fortunes that I saw tied on various racks around me. After doing the proper rituals to pay my respects to the temple, I was curious to see what fortune that I would get. After all, I was still in my nervous, jet-lagged haze, and perhaps a good fortune could lift my spirits and provide some optimistic insight for my next 10 days of travel. What I got was quite the opposite. I opened up the piece of paper to see bad fortune written, followed by a fortune that almost seemed targeted. It said, the seas ahead of you are far too treacherous. Go back home where you came from. What the bloody hell? I never read that fortune before. That's very specific. I tried not to let the piece of paper intimidate me and promptly tied it on one of the racks nearby. Out of spite, I ended up having an incredible 10 days in Japan and can't wait to go back. In your experience, do Japanese natives still participate in this tradition of Omikuji, or is it something gimmicky just for tourists? Keep up the good work. Justin from America. Now, when I was doing a video just before journey across Japan with Natsuki, we were in Kyoto, and we went to the Kiyomizudera Temple, and Natsuki bought an Omikuji paper fortune, and it was bad luck, and he was like, oh, fucking bad fortune shit, and he threw it on the floor. And then he went and bought a good one, a good fortune. He bought another
yes,
one. And
exactly.
It was good fortune.
That's what capitalism's like, all about. I am the master of my own destiny.
Well, it kind of made me think, he was so happy with his good fortune. But I was like, does it cancel each other out that you had a bad fortune?
Get another one.
Everything's rubbish. And then a good one.
Chase your wins.
Does it cancel it out? Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird, isn't it? I don't know.
I do like that you can get these kind of fortune things that do actually say something bad. Because a lot, like, whenever you sort of do, like, you go to, like, a faith-based kind of magician with a crystal ball, they're always talking about, you know, positive stuff. You know, they're always talking about, you know, you're going to meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger. They never sort of go, mate, you better go down in your cellar and hide because you are in so much trouble. Like, they never say that. They get the cards out and go, actually, a big skeleton with blood coming out of its neck. It's bloodless neck. Actually means a new beginning. They never do any of that. Like, they just, what they need to go is, skeleton is bad. Skeletons are spooky, man. You gotta get out of here. Get away from me. They never do this. I like the bad fortune coming up.
I don't think I've ever bought one myself. Mainly because I can't read the damn thing. It's always in complicated Japanese. I suppose you could get Google Translate to do it now, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what kind of fortunes you get. I don't know. I think Natsuki's one said your business will like go bankrupt or something like that. Which he didn't like.
I mean,
he didn't like the sound of
sweet release for Natsuki
out there in the countryside. Yeah, with the disappearing population, but he got a good fortune. He was happy. That's all that matters. Mm. It's quite a funny scene. It's in a video called 14 Days in Japan, the Ultimate Travel Itinerary. Good video, that. But what is going on in Japan this week, Mr. Dawson? Fill us in on the news. Something to do with romance, I understand.
Oh, romance, Chris. We love it. People need it, etc. Dating can be hard in this day and age with hurdles such as global pandemics, ugliness and sold-out marriage vending machines that we spoke about before.
Yeah.
That's why more and more people are turning to the convenience of dating apps to meet others in the hopes of making a romantic connection. But who do you trust? Do you trust your Tinders? Do you trust your Hinge? Do you trust your Grindr? No, you trust the Tokyo Metropolitan Government. That's who you trust. They're here to help releasing their own dating app with security that only the world's biggest bureaucracy can provide. The app is aimed at those who are 18 and up, living, working, or studying in Tokyo. It's set to utilise AI to find suitable pairings of users based on their personal info and a questionnaire, much like pretty much every other dating app. What is different from, like, your Tinders of this world, to this one is that the government-backed vetting process that comes along with it, which requires users to provide their marital status and income, as well as to take part in an online interview to confirm their identity. So it's just all very secure stuff, Chris.
Sounds a bit clinical,
very
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does sound a little bit clinical. If you're going to put your heart in the hands of a metropolitan borough, would you choose Tokyo or would you choose somewhere a little bit more romantic, like, I don't know, Fukuoka, get somewhere in Kyushu.
Fukuoka. Dating websites already kind of do this, like more serious ones, like Plenty of Fish or whatever. Tinder, no, probably not. But I'm sure there's already dating apps that do this kind of verification. I'm kind of mixed on this. I actually think it could be a good idea in some respects. It might make people who are kind of wary of doing this sort of thing a bit more comfortable and secure with doing it. It's backed and verified and everything by
and people know that
body.
They're not lying about their marital status and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I imagine there's quite a lot of people on Tinder being absolute wrong-uns.
Yeah, absolutely. I know someone who started dating a guy and it turned out he was married and whatnot, so it does happen. This reminded me of the sold out, as you mentioned, the sold out marriage vending machine, which was a vending machine. I think we reported on it, it must have been like a year ago now. And it was like a little vending machine in Tokyo in Kamata Station, where there's like a little vending machine out of shop front. And it's got like the top row of drinks are just real normal drinks. And then the second and third row are little cans. And they've got I think one row's men, one row's women. And on the little pink cans, it has, like, who they are, their age, a little bit about them. And then you buy the can and get their details. And it was sold out very fast.
1,000 yen.
Yeah, 1,000 yen. Pretty cool, right?
Wild. Absolutely wild.
I would have done that if I was single for a video as well. Could have been quite intriguing. But, I don't know. I think, clearly, the Tokyo Metropolitan Government are a little bit worried about the fact that not enough people are having kids. Marriage seems to be going down in terms of popularity, and this is a way around it. I would argue maybe helping women get back in the workplace in Japan is a better idea. I say get back and then everywhere in the first place.
No, say the Tokyo Metropolitan District. I'm going to spend all the tax money on setting up an app.
I think making it so Japanese women can don't have to choose between having a career or having children is the key to success there in most respects. But it's cool. I've never used a dating app before, actually. In some respects I wish I had, because it could be a funny story, and everyone I know who's done it always has some incredible stories from it. I think we've even had a few stories on here where, like, couples have met on Tinder and whatnot, but, like, yeah, the only couples I know have really succeeded using dating apps have used like a more like official service, like Plenty of Fish. We have to pay a certain fee and you go into a lot of debt, right? Those are the ones I've seen actually go somewhere. So if this is the same
I've always gone out with people I work with because I like to shit where I eat, baby. I like to have uncomfortable situations wherever I am at work.
Well, maybe I'm the same. You shall as a YouTuber after all.
Yeah.
But the world of YouTube, there is no workplace. The world is my workplace. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a cool idea, actually. I think it's a good idea. Do you think it's good, bad?
I think using tax dollars to set up a dating app, you do sort of think, is this what that should be for? Could you just fix some of the roads instead? So yeah, it's just a little bit.
We don't need bridges. We don't need roads. We need a dating app. A dating app for the masses. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. It'll be interesting once this gets up and running. We'll report back on how it goes later on in the year. For now, though, we're back in just a moment, guys, with your stories, comments and questions in the fax machine.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Ow. Now we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week for our listeners? Mr. Dawson, fill us in.
We got some faxes from Tyler. Tyler from San Diego. Hey, Chris and Pete, love the pod and I do appreciate the knowledge you've shared on the show that's helped me plan my trip. One thing I love to do when experiencing a new city for the first time is going to an observation deck or taking a helicopter tour. I found it to be a rad way to get the lay of the land and maybe you spot something that catches your eye that you must see on your visit. Tokyo has so many renowned observation decks, so I was wondering basically if you had a favourite. Have you ever done a helicopter tour of the city? And would that be better than picking a single deck? Is it worth doing one of those in Osaka? Chris, they could go up on that little ride on the top of Don Quixote, maybe.
I think that's shot again. I really wanted to go on that.
They shot on weird days, don't they? They sometimes shot on like a Wednesday, weirdly. But it was moving last time I was there.
Maybe that's it then. But I really wanted to go on it. It wasn't operational. It's a funny old thing. Yeah, it's a big Don Quixote store with a Ferris wheel stuck on the side of it where you get a great view of the Namba River and whatnot. I actually had a sponsor job a few years ago in Tokyo. And the people were like, we think it'd be great if you did a helicopter ride over Tokyo. And I had mixed feelings. I've never been in a helicopter before. I just think they just creep me out a little bit because I just don't. If something goes wrong with it, it's game over. It's not like a plane where you can sort of glide down and then die. It's a bit creepy. Although I remember having this exact conversation on a podcast a long time ago, and I got a message saying, actually, helicopters are very safe because when something goes wrong and it starts to fall, the rotors magically restart. And nothing I've seen in the history books has indicated that that is the case, but who knows? You could get a helicopter ride over Tokyo for like $500 though, I think, which is pretty reasonable for an hour or something. Mm. So you do it, right? You love a helicopter. It's your favourite thing, right?
No, frightening things. There's too many crashes. Don't like it. Do not. I'm sure the helicopter fans out there will sort of say there are so many safety mechanisms that allows you to. No, not enough. Sorry. Again, the helicopter can't glide. Well, actually, it can't. If the rotors go quickly and it's sharp, I've seen them. And it's not good. It's magic. Not good. Frightening. Absolutely chilling.
I mean, if you want an actual view, and you can get in the helicopter or just go up the Tokyo Sky Tree or Shibuya Scramble Tower, which I haven't been up because the queue's always really long, but I'm told it's good. I have no patience for queuing. My favourite observation deck, personally, is Mori Tower in Roppongi, because it's slap bang in the middle of Tokyo. You get an incredible 360 view from the roof, and it's a helicopter rooftop deck. Observation points, you get a great view. That's my vote. I am too lazy to queue for Shibuya Scramble, although Sharla and all my other friends assure me that is very good. So if you're patient, go and do it. We got one here from Ryan, who says, Ellie, Chris and Pete. I've been a huge Japanese pop culture and history fan for decades, and I recently got into building mecha model kits, mainly Gundam. One thing I've realised is Japanese people love their hobbies. There just seems to be a passion and dedication to hobbies and fandom that you rarely see anywhere else. That's probably how Japan became the geek mecca to people all over the world. But they aren't just dedicated to geek stuff. Japan seems to be the place where there are fanatics about every hobby. My question is there something about Japanese society or culture that makes people more dedicated and passionate about their hobbies? Thank you very much. All the best, Ryan. I mean, people in Japan do seem to be very good at like honing in on really... I think most people here want to be professional in one thing in their career or in their life, in their hobbies, you know, in a way that I don't remember seeing in the UK. You know, people are just happy getting by running a restaurant, whereas like you meet a Japanese chef and he wants to be the best at doing a certain thing. Even Natsuki, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Punk Rock, I don't play by the rules. He studies really fucking hard for his hair salon, for the beauty salon. He goes to Tokyo every month and has special classes to get his certification and also probably to go shopping and get drunk as well. But he takes it really seriously. And like everyone I know, every Japanese friend I have just focuses on one thing and becomes really good at it. People don't want to be a master of none. They want to be a master rather than jack of all trades here. Master of one. I'm not sure why that is though. I'm not sure why that is the case. But I think it's cool. I like the way people get really invested in mastering their craft here. You know, why do you think it is, Pete?
I don't know. I don't know what culturally means that they want to be the best that they can be. But I certainly appreciate the effects. I appreciate every... if you're into like craftsmanship or craftswomanship, I think you can kind of... I think there's an argument to sort of say that Japan is the only place to be, that sort of thing. If you're into something, you're really into something and you've got it.
I really admire that.
And you will
devote I've done like interviews in restaurants, like sushi restaurants, and they've got like the chef who's like spends 2 years learning just how to do some rice. It's like, wow. There must be a point after like week number three. He's like, I think I've learned everything. He's like, no, two more years of this. Fucking hell.
And then you pop, and then I come in and I put the little bit of ginger on top of the sushi.
They ruin it. And then you put your chopsticks in, you flip it over, it falls apart in the soy sauce, and it's all fucked anyway. We've got one here from Anna, who says, Dear incomparable Chris and passionate Pete, I've just stayed in a ryokan, traditional inn, with my husband for the first time. It was an incredible experience. The dinner was amazing, with 8 courses. Jesus, by the 6th course, we were really struggling. The seventh course came with a bowl of rice, which finished us off completely. We felt like we might offend the chef, so I ended up pocketing some of the leftovers like naughty schoolchildren trying to get away without eating all their dinner. By the end, I had a tissue filled with rice, fish and mushrooms in my pocket. Ugh, that's not good. Have you had similar experiences with being given such large meals? And is it rude to leave food? Thanks for the videos and podcasts, Anna. I mean, it is quite bad to leave food in Japan. They do take that quite, you know, it's kind of seen like disrespectful. It's kind of like drummed into kids at a young age. Don't leave anything behind. But putting a load of fish and rice and mushrooms in a tissue probably isn't the answer either. I think you could have just asked for a box. I was at a restaurant the other day with a Japanese friend. They couldn't eat like a whole salmon. They had a big salmon. And they ate half of it and they were like, give me a box. And the staff brought one over. So she just said, can I eat this later? And they put, don't use the tissue. Don't stick your fucking dinner in a Kleenex.
When you're giving them eight sets of food, it's fair. It's fair that you would have to. I think it's fair that you don't eat them all.
But I do, you know, I sympathise with Anna. At Ryokan's, like the kaiseki dinner is endless. You kind of feel like, oh, I'm done now. And there's another 45 courses to come along. So,
yeah.
But it's part of the fun. It's part of the fun. But don't worry about it. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into broadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back, guys, later in the week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days. We'll see you right back here. Do it all over again on the Abroad Japan Podcast. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Have a great week.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.